Last year, a bill was drafted that would have imposed tougher penalties on firearm felonies. It had support from some Republicans and even mild support from some in the gun rights movement, but it was ultimately never introduced.
In a recent piece, our next guest tells the story of the rise and fall of the legislation and what it means for the future of gun laws in Wisconsin. Bill Leaders is with us. He's the Money and Politics Project Director at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Good to be on your excellent show.
So why don't we start off with what this whole bill was about and what the proposed law might have done.
Well, this was a proposal that was announced in August of 2013, just as there had been a spate of shootings in the city of Milwaukee, some 23 shootings within a period of just a couple of weeks, including seven fatal shootings. A state senator, Republican state senator, Alberta Darling, said she wanted to introduce legislation which would toughen the penalty for felons who commit gun offenses. It would impose a mandatory minimum sentence of 3 years for any individual who committed a felony possession of firearm crime. Mm-hmm. There are penalties now, and they can be substantially higher than that, but they're not mandatory minimums. They can be much less than that in the actual application. This is something that the police chief of the city of Milwaukee, Edward Flynn, has wanted for some time. The city of Milwaukee, through its lobbying arm and through the office of Mayor Barrett, has also called for this and other changes in the law to help address some of the gun violence problems that exist in the city. Walking along comes this Republican state senator, says, I'm going to introduce it. And that was in August of last year.
So things seem to be moving forward. There was support from different people. Even some gun rights people were in support of it.
Well, at that point, that wasn't clear. Governor Walker said that he was open to the idea. There drew support from Representative Speaker Robin Voss in the State Assembly. They both said that, Voss actually came on and said he supported it, and Walker kind of said he was supportive of the idea, and as long as it didn't interfere with the rights of law-abiding gun owners, he was open to it. And so it did seem to come into play with a lot of support behind it, and then it kind of faded from view. Mm-hmm. Now, I had written about it at the time that it was introduced, and then it faded from view. And then in May, when this horrible incident happened in the city of Milwaukee, where a 10-year-old girl was shot in the head while playing on the playground by a stray bullet from a couple of people who had gotten into it, and one of them was firing a weapon, I looked back at the bill and tried to find out what I could about what had happened to it. And at that point, the city of Milwaukee said, well, they thought that it may have been circulated for co-sponsorship, meaning that, other lawmakers were asked to join in being sponsors of this legislation, but it was never actually introduced. So,
now, that happens from time to time with legislation, though, right?
Yeah, either the feeling is that the support isn't significant enough, isn't great enough, or the people to whom it's circulated will identify problems with the legislation, say, this is really a failing of it. You need to fix this, and for that reason, it's not introduced. So, yeah, it happens often that legislation would be introduced for co-sponsorship and then not actually be introduced. But I didn't know what happened with this bill, and when I asked Senator Darling's office for comment about what happened, they didn't tell me anything. So I was left just with the perspective of some Democrats in the legislature who were saying things like they thought that maybe some of the gun lobby groups put pressure on the senator and she backed down. They were portraying this as a case where maybe the gun lobby flexed its muscle and the senator backed down. Now, that's the only perspective I had at the time that I wrote that column in May. Honestly, it didn't ring true to me. I mean, Senator Darling is not a wallflower. I wouldn't expect that a little bit of pressure would force her knees to buckle. But that was the perspective that was offered. So I made an open records request of Darling's office for all of the correspondence that it had sent and received in connection with this bill.
So, and what did you find out in doing that? You got the records?
Well, it was mainly interesting for what it didn't contain. I mean, there were talking points and there were communications with other officials and there were a few responses to the co-sponsorship memo. And I was able to find out through the other co-sponsor, Democrat John Richards, in the State Assembly, that a total of 15 additional members of the assembly signed on to this bill, including four Republicans. In the assembly, there were four Republicans who were supportive of the bill. And then I was looking through the file, well, where is it that somebody said, good idea, bad idea, you better not do this, I have a concern about it? I didn't find any of that. The only thing that I found along those lines was a email from a gun rights activist in the Milwaukee area, Jim Fendry, who I've actually known for decades as a reporter. He runs a group called Wisconsin Gun Right Movement. And he had written an email just identifying a little bit of concerns that he had with the idea of a felony possession automatically carrying a 3-year mandatory minimum. But he also said in the memo that unless the NRA conveyed to him that they were unhappy with the bill, that he and his organization would not oppose it. And so I called.
Did you talk to the NRA then?
I didn't. I talked to Jim Fendry and followed up on that. And what Jim told me was that, no, the NRA never did oppose it. So far as he knows, it had no opposition from that organization. And further, he said that he thought that this was a bill that could have had, possibly, not certainly, but possibly could have had support from the pro-gun lobby. Because gun lobby, I shouldn't say gun lobby, gun rights activist, I should say, do support the idea of people obeying the law, and they do support the idea of there being penalties for people who disobey it. And this is, it was a type of legislation that they could very possibly have supported, in his view.
Hmm. So then... What does this story tell about the future of gun legislation in Wisconsin?
Well, what it shows is that even though this was a bill that had expressions of support from a Republican governor and the Republican Speaker of the Assembly, and even though it was introduced by a Republican state senator, and even though the gun organizations, the gun rights organizations, didn't oppose it and maybe actually had some sense of support for it, it never gained enough momentum even to be introduced. Hmm. And I think it just was disappointing on some level, probably for the sponsors, that the main sponsors, John Richards and Senator Darling, that more of their colleagues weren't willing to say, yeah, put my name on that bill, I want this to happen. And so it never went anywhere. So I think that was the message of the column, is that when you come to the issue of legislating around guns, that there's a real reluctance on the part of the political structure to do things, even in a circumstance like this where there is pretty much just a series of green lights.
Now, I've done some reading on this in other, you know, newspapers and stuff like that, and it appeared that there were some people who expressed concern that it was really only an issue in Milwaukee and it didn't affect the rest of Wisconsin, and that's why people backed off on support. Did you get any indication of that in any of the?
Yeah, in fact, Jim Fendry made that point too. He said that this is really an issue, the extreme gun violence that is a problem in a few zip codes in Milwaukee.
Right.
The impetus for this legislation came from Milwaukee because of the gun problems that it has. And yes, it would be applied statewide, but what the legislation would do is just impose a mandatory 3-year minimum sentence on people who are in felonious possession of a firearm.
Right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation. Bill Leaders is with us. He's Money and Politics Project Director at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. We're talking about this recent piece of gun crime legislation that didn't see the light of day in the state legislature. This is Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. We continue our conversation now with Bill Leaders from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. We're talking about his piece on gun crime legislation that had Republican support but never got introduced, and what that story says about gun legislation more generally.
And you can join the conversation right now at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Do you think that there's any possibility that new legislation affecting guns could be passed in Wisconsin. What do you think about gun-related laws? Do you think they should be toughened up to deal with felons who have guns? Are guns now the third rail of politics, and nobody's going to advocate for new laws? We'd like you to join that conversation. Call 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And why don't we get things started with Ken from Black River Falls. Ken, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. I was listening to what the purpose of this legislation is. It's a person who is convicted of a felony as an enhancer in terms of sentencing because they were using a gun in the commission of the felony. Am I understanding that right?
Well, they don't have to be using a gun in the commission of the felony. They have to be in felonious possession of a firearm. So if you are a felon and you are caught to be in possession of a gun, that is a felony. You're not allowed to do that. That's against the law. This would say, in that circumstance, you're going away for 3 years.
Well, there's a reason for that. I mean, I'm a criminal defense lawyer, and I understand the reason that people don't want to see guns used in the commission of crimes or to have felons in possession of guns. I mean, it's not like we're trying to punish people who own a gun and help an old woman across the street against traffic. It doesn't seem like a law that we'd get a lot of opposition. I'm mystified by the opposition. It actually protects the rights of people like me who have a gun or two, and I'm not a felon, and, you know, want to own a gun because I hunt or do target shooting or trap shooting.
So, Ken, you're an NRA member?
I'm a life member of the NRA.
Yeah. And as somebody with a legal background, are you familiar with these laws in other states or have any thoughts about that?
It's enough to stay up with the laws in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But Jim Fendry is no fool. I think I'd pay attention to him and what he's saying. He's made this his life's work, and I'm glad that Bill Luders talked to him. But, and I always enjoy everything Bill writes, by the way.
But from your position in Black River Falls, do you feel like there could be some value to saying, well, maybe this is just a Milwaukee issue and it shouldn't be a state law?
No, it's not just a I'm not going to. First of all, that almost implies profiling right off the bat. Secondly, I don't think it's just a Milwaukee issue. I mean, I was born in what's called the most dangerous city in the United States, Camden, New Jersey. Yet every city in the United States has a Camden in it, and they have problems. And the problems aren't going to be solved by restricting gun ownership because people who want to own guns are going to own them. But to have this as an enhancer, I suppose, makes sense. The next question is, how do you determine that that person owns a gun? Is there, what sort of a search are they supposed to be subject to? And what problems do they have there under, say, the Fourth Amendment, an unlawful search and seizure? I don't know.
See, the city of Milwaukee and the chief of police, they want a series of reforms, changes to be enacted to make it illegal for someone who has been, for instance, convicted of three misdemeanor offenses within a five-year period to obtain a concealed carry permit. Right now, you can have as many misdemeanor convictions as you want, not that you'd want them, and still get a concealed carry license. In fact, you can be repeatedly convicted of a misdemeanor crime for being in possession of a firearm without a concealed carry license. You can get 6, 7, 8, 10 criminal convictions for that misdemeanor, and if you apply for a concealed carry license, that would not stop you from getting it.
Well, thanks to Ken for those comments and questions. We really appreciate that. We are talking about gun control legislation in Wisconsin or gun-related laws in Wisconsin, and you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And again, I guess we got a sense from that call that there are people who are NRA members and gun owners who think
sure.
This is reasonable. How much is
It may just be that, you know, this is an issue that needs to saturate a little bit and I expect that it will be reintroduced. And again, this is not a measure that that people get, pardon the expression, up in arms about. They do seem to accept that if someone is breaking the law, that they should pay the consequences for that.
Yeah, and but did you get any sense, or do you have a sense that this is politics related? I mean, maybe we don't want to deal with this kind of stuff when it's an election year, and why don't we hold off? It doesn't necessarily mean that it'll never happen.
Yeah.
It just means it won't happen this year.
I think what this shows is that there is fear even in the absence of threats, that among the political class, that politicians are afraid to be associated with changing gun laws, even in cases where there's not a lot of strong or serious opposition.
800-642-1234 is the number. You can join the conversation. Let's go to, I can't read this. My glasses are kind of weird, but I think it's Abdi from Barron. Abdi, welcome to Central Time.
Hi. So my comment, can you hear me?
Yep, I can.
So my comment is this, you know, someone like me, I don't need a gun. I don't see any need for it. But I'm threatened by the fact that a lot of people are carrying guns in the city. And I'm okay if someone has a gun or two in their house. They should keep those guns in their house. And they should take it out when they have a need for it, like when they have to hunt or when they have to play a gun. But we have some laws in Wisconsin that people cannot carry a gun with them all the time. And humans by nature are a very destructive animals. Let us say someone gets mad and he has a gun or she has a gun and they get so mad and then they might kill someone with that gun, and then now they even have some laws that allow them to claim self-defense.
So Abdi, it sounds to me like you would favor some more gun-related laws in Wisconsin then.
So, I mean, my question is, why are gun owners so opposed to some gun regulations that allow them to have maybe one or two or three guns? Why are they opposed? That is my question.
Abdi? Well,
that's a good question, whether they are. You know, this issue, the perennially introduced bill that gets nowhere in Wisconsin is the bill that would require background checks for all gun purchases. It didn't even get a hearing when it was introduced this time. If you do public opinion surveys, that bill has overwhelming support by the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, has overwhelming support by gun owners in the state of Wisconsin, has overwhelming support by people who say they are members of the National Rifle Association. In all of those categories, the support is well above 50%, heading to into the 90s. In fact, one of the advocates for gun law changes, Jerry Bonavia, likes to say that the issue of background checks for gun purchases has a higher popularity rating in Wisconsin than Aaron Rodgers.
So why do you think that it, despite that, it doesn't move forward?
Because the decisions about what laws get passed are made by legislators and not by the citizenry. And that's where the disconnect is on this issue. And that it's clear from just the public opinion surveys that there is significant public support for certain kinds of changes in the law that the legislature is not embracing.
But don't they have a sense of responsibility to their constituency, though? I mean, they're politicians. I would think that would sway them to move in that direction.
On an issue like that, there is actual organized and coordinated opposition from certain gun-affiliated groups. The NRA doesn't like the idea of background checks. The NRA fights that. The NRA might fund their opponent. The NRA might try to take them out to make an example of them for having supported this. It's done it in other places. So in there, I mean, if on a purely political level, you could argue they are justified in having some concern about what the consequences should they throw their support behind that type of legislation.
Not from their constituents, but
from their constituents,
yeah. Okay.
Their constituents are all for it, if you can trust the surveys.
Well, let's go to another phone call. David from Green Bay. David, welcome to Central Time.
Hello. I'm just kind of curious, why isn't it mandatory that everybody goes through gun safety course? I mean, has anybody really stared down a bullet? I know I have 3 times and protected myself. How many people actually get the chance of staring down a bullet and know how to defend themselves?
Well, David, thanks for that call. Bill, it seems like that's another area where, you know, sort of requiring gun owners to go through certain training is something that he suggests would be a good idea, gun and, safety class.
Yeah, and it's also something I think the majority of gun owners would be supportive. I don't know if they'd be supportive of the idea of a mandatory class, but I think gun owners in general are fairly responsible, and they want people who have and use guns to know what they're doing, and they would be supportive of, you know, at least the, in concept that that people who have guns know how to use them, and they educate themselves, and they take the safety courses. I don't see why that wouldn't have support.
Well, let's go to just one more call. Teresa from Milwaukee. Teresa, welcome to Central Time.
Hi. Well, two tiny things. I think that Alberta Darling putting this up as an idea is sort of a win-win for her. She never has to vote on it because, you know, darn good and well, it's not going to come to a vote. It's extremely reasonable, so even the rabid people, you know, can say, well, at least there was a reason for that. But she never had to vote. And then a few other people can say, yeah, we go along with it too. So they get the best of both worlds. The other thing I wanted to say is any legislator in a state who says, well, that's a Milwaukee problem, I don't have to care about it, doesn't care about the state. You know, even if it is a Milwaukee problem, why do you want the people of Milwaukee to suffer more? So any legislator who would say something like that is not actually viewing their job appropriately.
Well, and Teresa, thanks for that comment. Bill, final comment on that?
The urgency of this bill and the relevance of this bill is underscored by this 10-year-old girl in Milwaukee who was shot in the head by two convicted felons who are not supposed to be having guns and are not subject to mandatory minimums. That girl was just taken off of life support. And
well, Bill, thanks for joining us. That was Bill Leaders, Money and Politics Project Director at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Mike Arnold. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.